this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nate Friedel, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. It's been far too long, and I have my brother, Keith Franz, at Bull Scripted Online. How you doing, my man?
Kind of just relishing in the summer league. It's nice to get that basketball back, and we're going to go through another dead period, so it's nice to have it for a little bit here.
Yeah, basketball back. It's been, I mean, to me, this is the almost become, it's almost eclipsed the regular season in terms of drama, excitement. It's hard to beat the NBA offseason and the free agency period and the draft. I mean, just excitement galore. And wow, what a roller coaster ride we've gone on for the last few weeks. Where do we begin? It's been far too long. Let's start out. Let's go back in time to the draft. Obviously, we were together there and at the great Doug Tonis, the great one, Doug Tonis's party, legendary party with a ton of great Bulls fans. Initially, obviously, I was kind of focused on DeAndre Hunter, and when Atlanta moved up to get him, it was not meant to be. And I think both you and I were probably in the same view, shared the same view about White, that, you know, we just weren't overly excited about him. But in the interim, since the draft occurred, I've spent a lot more time on him, spent a lot of time watching him. I loved his interview after the draft, talking about his father who died. He wrote an incredible article. I encourage everyone to read that on the Players Tribune about his father. It's just impossible not to fall in love with the kid, and I'm fully on board now. I do feel he's not remotely ready, and I don't think he should be the starter, but I do feel that he can develop into a very good point guard, a very good combo guard, and I have come around with the more tape I've watched. What say you?
I think it's definitely clear that he has the intangibles that you want in today's league. Summer League, his three-point shot hasn't been the greatest, but you see the potential there. You see his ability to use the step back and create space for himself, and his speed and his change of pace are, you know, top tier. So going forward, he does have to become a better facilitator. It's a little hard to do in the Summer League when you don't have the greatest teammates and you don't know your teammates. So I'll give him a little margin of error there in terms of assist to turnovers throughout Summer League. But I do think the Bulls landed a good pick. He's 19 years old. He's definitely a fierce competitor. You can see that he takes it personally. He wants his teammates to succeed. So I do think that the Bulls did land another very high character pick at number 7.
The things that really just, when you watch tape on him in college, he's just so fast and pushing the pace. It just hits you in the face how quick the kid is. I wasn't enamored with his shooting in college, without a doubt, so I don't expect him to be a great shooter in the pros, and obviously he hasn't been in summer league. Again, he struggled today. I was looking at his stats. I think he was 4-17 from the field, and again, 1-7 from three-point line. So that's been definitely a cause of concern with his shooting. But again, he's 19. As long as the Bulls don't do something foolish, which I think is to, you know, throw him to the wolves in a situation that's a little bit difficult this year with a team that's, I think, on the upswing. And, you know, you could just really hurt his confidence by just putting him in the starting position. I think he's best served this year to come off the bench and let, you know, Dunn and Santoransky battle it out for the starting guard position. What say you?
I think best case scenario, you have Santoransky starting with Levine. I just think they complement each other a lot more than Dunn and Levine do, but I do think that Dunn and Kobe off the bench together could really complement each other fairly well. Kobe's good off ball. Dunn kind of needs the ball, but Kobe will still have opportunities to be the lead ball handler in a multiple ball handler system. He'll get to start the break, which is what his strong suit is at this point. And then you have, you know, two plus size guards at the 1 and 2. And Dunn can take the better offensive matchup on the other end. And I like the way that sounds personally. I know everybody else is trying to get Chris Dunn out of here for something as little as Justin Holiday. But I do think that Dunn still has value to this team in the sense that he can help ease Kobe into being a true point guard for this season.
I agree 100%. I think people have gone way overboard in burying Dunn. He did not have a great year last year. No doubt about that. He's at his all-time low, arguably, in trade value. right now, it makes no sense to me, to just remove him from the equation when on the defensive end, he's still one of the better perimeter defenders. I don't care what the advanced stats said last year. To me, he clearly is. On this team, I think he's the best perimeter defender still. I love his defense, and I think he can be valuable rotation player because he can play the two too. I feel I don't feel like I think he fits in with a good modern NBA in that he can guard three positions. He's not great as a shooting guard or point guard, but I did see some moments last year where I saw glimpses of what I feel like he can become, which is a good point guard, either off the bench or occasional spot start or a shooting guard. He's got great length. On the defensive end, he fits with any player on the Bulls. He covers Levine. When Levine's out there, he can pick up the harder backcourt offensive player on the defensive end. I think people have gone way overboard with burying this kid. Do you agree?
I completely agree. It's kind of disheartening for me because I have been a pretty big Chris Dunn fan, and I understand after his first season here where he was the most clutch player on the team, he was very important in the win streak and that they had in that first tank season. He got to be the guy for a good portion of that season. And when given the right opportunities, we've seen what Chris can do. In each season of his career, his lowest game high as a rookie for assists is 13. The second year he had 14. Last year he had
17.
A career high of 17 assists and 16 points on 6 of 9 shooting. So we continue to see the flashes. I think the injuries have taken away from his consistency, as well as the amount of lineups that the Bulls have had in these last 2 years. Nobody has gotten the opportunity to have real continuity. I think, I'm not positive, I didn't look it up before the cast, but I think we had 27 different starting lineups last year. So if you want a guy to be a lead guard and an amazing facilitator, he's got to know his teammates, and I don't think the Bulls have given anybody enough time in the same lineup to really see what they can do together.
I think a lot of people have soured on him, and there were some definite warning signs, some things that I found extremely disappointing in that article he did, interview with Darnell Mabry in The Athletic. And in that article, he basically had said, I wasn't really told to work on my three-point shooting, or that wasn't a focus for me. I think it's just a ridiculous statement. I mean, you got to be smart enough to realize where the league is going. There's never an excuse not to work on your three-point shooting as a guard in the NBA. So that was absolute nonsense. But a couple things in that article people, haven't focused on because of their blind love for Tom Thibodeau, but he did share what a disaster his rookie year was, where he didn't even play point guard. He was basically told to go into the corner and stand up as a spot shooter, so he wasn't even playing the point guard position. So in reality, this was his second year playing point guard last year. So a very difficult position to learn. It doesn't happen overnight. I know we see eye to eye on this, and it seems like I think we're definitely in the minority on this. It's probably you and me, maybe four other people on Dunn Island. It's probably him and his agent. But, we'll see what happens. But at worst, Jim Boylan came out today and said he's a starter, and everybody freaked out. And part of me says, hey, let's have an open competition in camp and let's see how it goes. But I also do believe in I think the org has kind of really, hammered him this offseason, maybe rightly so. But let's see if he rises to the challenge. He's got an incredible amount of ability. Who knows? Maybe he comes out and plays more consistently and shows the things we believe about Chris Dunn that we saw in his first year here. So I'm not ready. And if he does, then you actually have a tradable asset as opposed to the nonsense I've been hearing now.
No, yeah, the stuff that I'm hearing now of a second round pick, you traded more to get Satoransky in a sign-in trade. Justin Holiday brought in 2 second round picks for the Bulls, one that resulted in Gafford. So hearing stuff like that, it kind of just baffles me because it's like, all right, if that was your plan and that's all you could get for Chris Dunn, why didn't you just send Chris Dunn to Washington in the Satoransky deal if his value is only a second round pick?
They probably didn't want him because he does have $5 million. Like, Washington's only concerned in shedding space, right? That's all they care about, it seems like, is
Well, they gave us Otto Porter for ultimately a protected second after they didn't retain Jabari or Portis.
Exactly, but that's part of the plan. I mean, there's no way that team was in cap hell, and they had no choice. They had to get rid of him. They didn't want to trade him. I know tons of people in D.C., and without a doubt, they wanted Porter as part of their future. But the minute that Wall hurt his Achilles and basically condemned that team to a first round at best out, it was over. They had to get rid of him, and it's a mess there now. And so I can understand why they didn't want to bring a $5 million contract back. I do understand that. Portis and Parker were clearly just fodder to bring in to get this under the salary cap. They have a long history of not wanting to pay the salary cap, so a salary tax or a penalty. So it's completely what I expected from them. Regardless, let's build up his value. Just don't give him away. I mean, in the nonsense about Holiday, I mean, my God, we're really going to bring that guy back? That disaster? No way. I don't care if he's off the bench. It's the last thing I want to see is tempting Boylan playing him 35 minutes again.
I think Holiday playing an excessive amount had a lot to do with tanking.
I hope you're right.
I'd be glad just to steer clear of Justin for a third time. He was also part of the crew that wanted to form a mutiny. So I just don't know why you willingly bring that back in, let alone give up something that's arguably more valuable to do so, just because he might fit a need on your depth chart a little bit more. Satoransky can play the three. Thaddeus Young can play the three if you need him to.
It's exciting. This team has tremendous versatility. Dunn can play the one and two. I think Kobe White can play the one and two. I think he's a combo guard. Zach can play some time at the one. Satoransky can play three positions. Tremendous versatility now in the backcourt. And Valentine obviously can play several positions. It's really overnight become a very versatile, not overnight, but over the course of two seasons, a lot more combinations can be played. You can go defense first, offensive first, etc. But let's get a little bit into the other draft pick that we haven't touched on. Because you were, I think, calling for this before the pick happened, while most of the people, wanted Bull. Daniel Gafford, what do you like about Daniel? Obviously, he's been absolutely impressive and fantastic in the preseason. What did you see in his game that you thought would be a good fit for the beloved?
He is just a high-energy, traditional, big shot blocker, rim runner. He's kind of put on display his defensive versatility and just his motor. You can just see it in the offseason. He flies up and down the floor like a gazelle. I think he almost broke the summer league record for blocks at 7. He's just a motor, man. And it's very exciting to watch. And it's crazy to think that a player like that in this draft that was heralded as being so devoid of depth, that he was available at 38. And the Bulls gave him a 4-year contract, which has me extremely excited. You get a very good player on a value contract. I think he's good in a lot of situational settings as well as just backing up Wendell. Hell, I wouldn't even be surprised to see him start just for the sake of the jump ball. You never know what could happen there, but I am really excited about Gafford. And on draft night, I was actually more excited about Gafford than Kobe. It's evened out a bit for me now, but yeah, I'm very excited for Daniel.
In the summer league, he's looked absolutely fantastic. I think he's averaging a 20-10. I know today he had 8-for-10 from the free throw line, 80% from the free throw line. He's almost a double-double every game. He's just been really, really impressive. And he doesn't have that shooting ability, which I think that's the primary reason why he didn't, in his second year, he didn't show it. Like, I think that's what the scouts were looking for him to, hit some from the outside. That's something he's not going to bring. But he's got a lot of, Noah-ish qualities, where I think he's going to be a huge favorite in Chicago with a guy who plays that hard. A guy like that is always beloved. He's in that Taj vein, the Noah vein of defense first, plays really hard, going to have some incredible dunks. He's going to be beloved here, and I'm really excited.
He's got the yell down, too.
Yeah, exactly. And it really seems like a good kid. I loved one of his answers to his questions. One of the questions in the press conference was, why did you fall? What was the reason for you fell? And 9 out of 10 would have said, he basically put the blame on, you know, the GMs that didn't believe in him or whatever, right? He took responsibility. He said, you know, I said, a lot of that's on me. You know, I didn't show what I needed to. And I really liked that. There are just some things about this kid I've seen I've really liked so far. So I'm 100% on board. I love that he's going to be part of rotation. He should absolutely be one of the guys coming off the bench. Let's get to the free agency, news. What say you about what the Bulls did? Thad, I didn't even think was an option. I couldn't believe we got him. I've loved that guy for a long time. And, you know, I forgot that he actually spent time with Zach in Minnesota. Let's start out with him. What's your take on that signing?
It was kind of a signing that I had mentioned a couple of times early in the season. Early in the off season, and I kind of fell off of it and forgot about it and really didn't think it was possible after what he did for Indiana with Oladipo out. I thought that they would do what they could to retain him, and they didn't. And obviously he was the Bulls' initial signing right out the gate, so he clearly was at the top of their list. I think in terms of a backup power forward, I don't think you could do any better. He's a starting caliber player. He brings great veteranship. He's durable. He's played 81 out of 82 games the last two seasons, and both games that he sat were just because Indiana was already in the playoffs and they didn't need him for the last game of the season. So I think bringing a guy like that in that you can rely on health-wise, as well as an outstanding veteran who luckily has some past experience with one of our best players, I couldn't have been more thrilled with the signing.
Yeah, I was absolutely shocked it happened. Just a little background, Thaddeus Young against Cleveland 2 years ago in the playoffs. I mean, I've watched a lot of his game over the past few years, and he's the kind of guy, to me, who just comes off the screen with his athleticism, how hard he plays. He does a lot of the little things that help you win games. And I didn't even hear his name mentioned at all as a potential option for the Bulls. Kind of shocked, actually, because I think he'd be a better fit with a lot of contending teams probably, but I guess it wasn't as important to him. You know, he definitely still got paid a little bit more than like the mid-level exception. But man, am I glad he's on the beloved Bull. Not only that, you know, he's a career 50% shooter from the field, really smart in the free throw and in his shooting. Not a great free throw shooter. It was one of the things that just only one of a few negatives on him. But you know, in his 3-point percentage, I think this past year was at 35%. Which is almost a career high. It was his career high this past year. And I take that back. 2 years ago in 16-17, he was at 38%. But, I mean, if he could be anywhere between 35 and 38%, another huge addition, a guy that can hit the three, I'm just ecstatic about that addition. What did you think about Satoransky with the sign and trade? That's another one I didn't see coming. I didn't even think it was remotely had a chance for it. What's your take on his game?
I think he adds to what the Bulls said that they've been looking for, and which we touched on a little bit earlier, which is just versatility. He's a 6'7 point guard who can play anywhere from 1 to 3. He's a good teammate. He makes his teammates better, which is what we were looking for. We wanted, you know, similar to what we drafted for, in a plus-size guard with outside shooting ability to complement Zach LaVine, who's very ball-dominant. You got a guy in Satoransky who doesn't need the ball. Shot 40% and was only on 2 attempts per game, so I'd like to see a little bit more volume, but maybe he'll get those opportunities here in Chicago that he didn't get in Washington the same way we saw Otto thrive. He obviously has chemistry and experience with Otto in the past, which I think inserting him into the starting lineup, which he should be the starter opening day, in my opinion, I think you're going to have a very fluid offense. And everybody's going to get their touches, and I think it's going to be a happy situation.
He's a 40% career three-point shooter. 9 out of the top 10 teams last year in the NBA in three-point field goal percentage made the playoffs. 9 out of the bottom 10 teams in three-point field goal percentage missed the playoffs. The only team that made it in the bottom 10 was Oklahoma City Thunder. They were out in the first round. You have to hit the three in today's NBA to succeed. And quickly, the Bulls, I think, recognize that. They added players that can hit the three, and Satoransky is a 40% career three-point shooter. You got Valentine coming back. Obviously, Otto Porter Jr. was a huge addition at the trade deadline, who's fantastic, one of the elite three-point shooters in the league. Now you're suddenly surrounding Zach LaVine with Lauri Markkanen, Otto Porter Jr., Satoransky. It's going to be a layup line. I always bring this up about when back in the day in 2010, 2011, and I try to give this visual to, you know, a lot of the teams I coach or get involved with, is three-point shooters surrounded by a player that can attack the rim. Really, it's a difference between making the court look like a football field or making the court look like a bowling lane. So if you have three-point shooters like, you know, Markkanen and Porter Jr., and you put a basket at the goal line and you start Zach LaVine at the 50, you know, yard line, there's not a player in the league that's going to keep him away from that basket if he's got enough room to work. However, if you take a guy like Zach LaVine, you surround him with players like Holiday and, you know, just chuck artists that suck at shooting the three-pointer, that basketball court looks a lot like a bowling lane, and there's not a it's very easy to stop Zach LaVine from getting to the rim if the court looks like a bowling lane. So the Bulls have done a great job in adding shooting. It's going to be, I think, a fantastic season for Zach LaVine. I would actually bet money on him. You know, I think he's going to have just a monster year if Laurie progresses to the three-point shooter that I think he will, and Satoransky gets a significant amount of playing time. With him and Otto Porter Jr., it's going to be layup lines, you know, dunk lines galore.
So let's. No, I guess that would bring us to Cornette. What was your take on that side?
Yeah, so I mean, to me, it's fine. Like, I'm not as excited as I think some other people were. To me, a lot of his best games were against the Bulls, and he was kind of a guy I did keep an eye on, and he'd have one game that'd be like, wow, and then, you know, four that were just awful. So he's not a guy I expect to be in the rotation unless there's an injury, but you've significantly upgraded your bench from 6 to 15, right? And last year the Bulls had too many guys that playing 6 to 9 in the rotation that should be, you know, 12 to 15. And I think now with that addition, I mean, it does give you options, right? If you want to bring big guys out, like let's say against the Sixers and you want to play a lineup with Cornette and Markkanen, what's Embiid going to do? Who's he going to guard? You're going to pull him away from the basket because he's got to guard one of those two guys, and both those guys can hit the three. So it just gives you another tool or another option, you know, as a good shooter, to really bring some of those big defenders that are good at guarding the rim, you know, like a Gobert, against those lineups, to pull them out and free up some space for, you know, a guy like LaVine to work. What say you?
Yeah, unlike our draft takes, I have to agree with you here again. I wasn't overly thrilled about it. I found some humor in the fact that adding him supposedly added 2 wins to the Bulls' win total.
It's such a garbage stat.
I wasn't really buying that personally, but I do think he's a polar opposite to Daniel Gafford, at least on the offensive end, and that is a tool that you have in your toolbox now to where you can just all-out space the floor with your big guys, and just having that option could come in handy. So it's not a signing I could be upset about. Kind of like the Archie one.
Yeah, let's get into that real quick, because, I mean, that one was roundly celebrated. And you know, Archie's a fine guy. He's a fine player. He's a great story. He's got great hair. I know I've joked around about him. I like him. He's a great kid, no doubt about it. But for people to be acting like, you know, celebrating him, and I really laugh when he should be starting, and I'm like, give me a break. The guy's he's a fine 11 to 15 guy in your roster, third string point guard. I know he handles the ball fine. As soon as somebody starts paying attention to Ryan, it's all over. It's all over. So, I mean, he's basically, I call him the Judd. I see shades of Judd Bushler. I always joked around with this. Like, people thought Judd Bushler was a good basketball player. Judd Bushler was a joke. He would walk out on the court, and his man would immediately, when he stepped out on the court, peel off and double-team Jordan. And then he'd hit a bunch of wide-open threes and at like a 40% rate when nobody was within 12 feet of him. Nobody's ever seen more open space than Judd Bushler. And suddenly the Pistons were dumb enough to give him a contract, and he shows up in Detroit, and everybody's wondering why he sucks. Well, it's because he doesn't have Jordan next to him. So Ryan, you know, great story. I think he's a fine point guard. He had a great game against the Suns. I'll never forget. You know, that's what you expect. If the Bulls are going to be a playoff team, I don't expect to see him in a rotation. What say you?
Neither do I. I think the contract, $3 million a year, the third year being a team option or partially guaranteed or whatever it was, I don't think that's horrible. You know, it's not really going to hurt you. I do think Ryan is a good practice player. I think somebody that having him around is beneficial to the team. He's infectious. He's a hard worker. And he is somebody that is reliable if you have an injury to a point guard ahead of him in the rotation, to where he can come in. His conservative style of play isn't going to hurt your team. He can kind of just seamlessly fit in, does the right things. But I don't think that he's anything to really be excited about.
No,
to have on your team.
And I got to be honest, I prefer Shaq Harrison to him. I saw Shaq Harrison play up close in this season, second half of the season. He was by far the most impressive player in the game against Toronto. I saw at three rows up at the UC defensively on the Bulls. I mean, the guy was incredible defensively. He's got tremendous defensive versatility for his size. He's clearly a better defender than you know, Ryan. Now, obviously, he can't hit the broadside of a barn. That's probably what's going to cost him his career in the NBA. But I'd still prefer him to Ryan. And I think I'm in the minority on that one. What say you?
Well, we're both minorities then, because I definitely would have taken Shaq's defensive versatility on the back end of the bench over Archie's cheerleading dances.
I agree. But it's exactly. It's not loose sleep over. Like, I'm sure he's a good leader, and he seems like a really good kid, and I know the fans love him. So I'm not going to get upset about it, right? If he's starting, I'm going to be furious. Absolutely furious.
If he's even in the rotation as things currently look, I'm going to have some problems with it. But having him around for the price tag, I don't think there's too many negatives to Ryan if he's not a rotational player.
No, he's fine. Yeah, every, you know, bring him in 10 minutes a game when we're up by 20, you know, something like
that. So I would have taken either guard of Shaq or Lemon over Archie as the last man on the bench before Felicio. But
I wouldn't have taken Lemon. Like, Lemon's, you know, nice story and all, but I think he's going to be 27 when the season starts. I'd prefer Ryan to him, but definitely not to Shaq. Regardless, it's third string that we're talking about, right? So let's not worry about that. Let's talk about the rotation, though. Like, as we head into the season, how are you feeling? Like, let's talk about, you know, the front court. How do you foresee the Bulls kind of playing? I guess probably the best thing to do would go based on the matchup, or do you feel like there's going to be like a pretty steady rotation? Like the first, let's say, front court player off the bench is going to be Thad, probably Young. Or do you feel like, you know, they're going to put the Rook out there, DG out there a little bit? How do you kind of foresee them going for the first guy off the bench and who will be coming out?
I think Thad will be the first guy off the bench, and I think that we see a lot of Thad, Lowry, 4-5, because
yeah.
Just going to play the modern style of basketball, five and out, spread the floor, and I'm actually really excited about that. Thad's a solid rebounder. Lowry last year, you know, showed the ability to be a great rebounder, so I think that's a lineup that we might see a lot, and obviously that's kind of a situational lineup. There's certain teams and certain matchups that you won't run that against, but I do think most nights that that'll be the first one off the bench. He'll probably grab Wendell, and we'll play a little bit of small ball for a little bit.
I think that's probably the way to go, and move Lowry to center and have him play there as much as possible. I mean, our best players off the bench is going to be Young. You got to figure out a way to put him in the game, and I'm really excited about the potential of the Bulls going big with athletic players, like throwing Zach at the point guard position, let's say, you know, throwing, then going like Otto Porter Jr., Young, you know, Lowry, and then Wendell Carter Jr., where you're able to go big, but you're still athletic enough that you can guard all the wing positions.
And that's something that you might have to do against the 76ers.
Absolutely.
With Simmons, Horford, and Embiid.
Absolutely, which gets to my next point. Like, I think a lot of the moves they did, to me, the team in the East that clearly is the cream of the crop is the Sixers to me. With all the changes that have happened, do you agree with that assertion that it's the Sixers, you know, it's their Eastern Conference for the taking next year?
I mean, yeah, I didn't think that when Jimmy Butler was rumored to be in all these sign-in trades that they were going to pull anything off that was really going to wow me. I also didn't expect Al Horford to turn down $30-whatever million to get out of Boston. obviously he got a fairly lucrative longer-term deal with a lot more guaranteed money at his age. That's probably something that he was comfortable with, and he got to move to a contending situation. But they definitely have the best starting lineup. I think losing Reddick's going to hurt them a little bit, yes, because they don't have the shooting that they did last year. I'm sure that'll be addressed throughout the season. But their starting five is looking pretty deadly. And Josh Richardson is a very underrated player.
Absolutely. And I think the team is deeper. I mean, just think about having Al Horford, who's a fantastic defensive player, and Embiid out there at the same time. I mean, that's going to be pretty scary for any team that hopes to attack the rim. That's why I think the Bulls, you know, they can throw out some big guys that can pull those guys out away from the rim, especially if Wendell Carter Jr. evolves as I expect him to. So, but for the next, I'd say next season especially, the Sixers are going to be a handful. And people forget about Smith too. Zaire Smith, who was, you know, hurt all last year, he was a very athletic big guard, big small forward. He could play multiple positions. I really like their team. You're right, they're a shooter away. I would be all over Korver if I was them to see if he could somehow get him on the squad at a, you know, attempt to get out of the East and be playing for a championship. But to me, they're the clear best team in the East. Let's go through some of the other teams, though, in your opinion, that got considerably better. Let's just focus on the East for today. Considerably better, who's took a step back. And I really believe the Bulls are going to be a 7 or 8 seed this upcoming season. What say you?
I don't have a doubt about it that if we're healthy that we're going to be in contention for 6, 7, 8 in the playoffs. I think the Celtics got worse. They traded ultimately no Kyrie doubt. And Horford for Kemba and Kanter. So
I know.
And obviously they had their chemistry issues and all that was going on. So maybe Tatum and Brown return to form, Eastern Conference final form, and, you know, the Celtics take off again. But I think they've taken a step back. The Pistons, they added Rose, but they've kind of stayed the same for the most part. Maybe Rose, you know, helps them make that last push that they need towards the end of the season. I think the Magic literally stayed the same.
Well, how about the Bucks? The Bucks took a step back. When you lose a guy, you know, do you think they're better? How can anybody argue that? You know, they were great. What do you think about the Bucks?
I mean, I don't think, you know, I'm not the biggest Mirotić fan, but having that kind of stretch four with Giannis is a big necessity. I think Wes Matthews is a good pickup for them, but you lose Brogdon.
Yeah, Brogdon is the big loss.
You lose Mirotić, and you add Wes Matthews and Robin Lopez. I don't really think that, you know, you improved. What you had to do was give Chris Middleton a 5-year max, which makes Otto Porter's contract look fantastic now. And that's really your big offseason move, was staying the same and not going too far backwards.
Brogdon was, at times last year, especially in the playoffs, your second-best player. His shooting is huge for that team, and you didn't really replace it. You know, obviously, Mirotić is a bum, so that's not a real loss. And then Robin Lopez overall is, I think, probably an upgrade. I think what they did is they tried to compete with the Sixers and getting Lopez. Now they're going to go with the Lopez brothers. I think for large periods of time, when you're going against Embiid and Horford, which will be interesting to see. But I don't think they're a better team. I think that's a huge loss losing Brogdon. I really liked his game. Indiana, you know, obviously it all depends on how Oladipo looks when he gets back, right? But I agree. I think a lot of teams in the East, obviously the Raptors took a massive step back. I still think they're going to be, you know, probably a playoff team. It's wide open. You know, it's really wide open now. And, you know, Charlotte's going to be a disaster.
I can't believe they gave Terry Rozier $19 million a year.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
What?
And I kind of liked, you know, I didn't love Rozier. I respected Rozier, you know, a couple of years ago, but what they paid for him is just a disaster. It's a disaster.
Chris Dunn's not even pulling second-round picks in trade talks, and Terry Rozier's out here making $19 million a year. I don't know what's going on.
Well, the biggest one to me is Brooklyn. So everybody's going to celebrate in Brooklyn, and probably rightly so. Obviously, you got two great players. But, you know, is he that much? Is Irving the delta between Irving and Russell? Is it that much? You know, I don't know. Like I know there's you'd rather have Irving, absolutely, but I'm not sure it's massive. Like I don't think the team's going to be. They might be 4 or 5 wins more. You know, they're basically a 500 team last year. They'll probably win 44 or 45. Durant's out all next year. You know, so it all depends on how good they are when Durant comes back. Obviously, when he comes back, they're going to be a significantly better team. But I don't think they're going to be great. I think they're going to, you know, Durant's, nobody's really come back from that injury. I think Durant's probably better suited than anyone else to come back from it since he's so skilled and he can shoot and his game's not dependent on athleticism. But what did you think of that whole deal with Brooklyn? And are you celebrating or do you feel like they're going to be as strong as some people seem to think they will be?
I think if KD comes back healthy next year, they'll be as strong as people think. But I'm kind of in the same boat as you where I definitely, one for one, take Kyrie over D'Angelo Russell. Yeah. But Kyrie has also missed like 20-plus games all but the 2016-17 season where he played 72 games. He's had a lot of injuries throughout his career. From college to the NBA, he has not consistently stayed healthy. So I think while there is obviously a lot to celebrate, you got arguably two top 10, at least two top 15 players in the NBA. In an offseason, you gave up a younger all-star, although it was, you know, somewhat of a farce with Oladipo going down and D'Lo getting in. But you gave up on this core and this culture and everything that you put together, and it's a big reason why they were an attraction outside of the fact that the Knicks are just a dumpster fire and nobody wanted to go there. I don't know how to feel about what they did. Obviously, the ceiling is limitless, but there's that gray area in there where maybe KD doesn't recover. Maybe he comes back kind of like Kobe after the Achilles, and it's just all downhill. Yeah. So it's really...
It's a huge risk. It really is.
It was a risk worth taking, but at the same time, I don't know that it results in what they're looking for.
Yeah, you take it exactly 10 out of 10 times. To get a you know a player like that in Irving too, but it's not guaranteed. It's not like you know Durant going to the Golden State Warriors. It's there's a lot of gray area here, and I think the Bulls are well positioned. Let's get in to wrap this baby up about Westbrook to finalize the whole story about him. You know, very few people defended Westbrook more than I did in his prime. I loved his game. I loved how hard he plays. I thought he was, you know, when Oklahoma City was challenging the Heat for in the NBA Finals, I always defended him. I think there were a lot of Durant apologists out there that just always focused on the negatives of Westbrook when he was a force of nature and clearly a huge part of why that team was great. But he's 31 years old. His game is almost completely dependent on athleticism. I do not think he's going to age well. I think he's going to age very ugly. There were a lot of warning signs last year. He shot 65% from the free throw line for a guy that was consistently at 80%. Horrible sign. He had low, and I think because of that, he had a low free throw attempts career. One of the career lows, or it was definitely in the last 5 years his lowest amount. I'm not for trading Zach LaVine for or any of the core players. For Russell Westbrook. Oklahoma City's in cap heck. If you want to make a trade and send one of our secondary players over there and maybe some draft assets, I'd be up for it. But I am not for trading and throwing what I think is something special out the window for Westbrook at this stage in his career. What say you?
I did not realize that Westbrook shot 42% from the field, 29% from three-point, and 66% from free throw.
Terrible.
That is
terrible. Yeah. Well, the biggest one is the free throw line because I saw this happen with Noah. Noah for his career wasn't a great free throw shooter, but for about 5 straight seasons, I'm doing this off the top of my head. He was over 70%. He wasn't bad. In 2015 in March, and that was the year when the Bulls won 50 games and obviously beat the Bucks in the playoffs, lost to the Cavs in round 2. Right around March, he literally lost ability to shoot free throws. He became one of the worst free throw shooters in the NBA. It was one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. I don't know why, and I don't think anybody really even noticed or paid attention.
You mean you weren't shocked that the tornado started swirling out of the bowl instead of going in?
Not the free throw. It doesn't make any sense how you could be consistently a pretty decent free throw shooter and just fall off the map to, you know, sub 50%. He was shooting 30% in the playoffs at points. Regardless, I saw something similar with Westbrook. That's a horrible sign to go from 80% career free throw shooter to 65. I can't recall seeing that. You know, like, for a guy who's really dependent on getting to the line and getting a lot of his points at the line, you know, what say you?
I am not a fan of trading for Westbrook, and I know there's a lot of Bulls fans out there that are, oh, what do you mean? Every time we talk about, you know, the Bulls need to make a move for the next disgruntled star, and then they come up and it's, oh, I don't want to trade any of the core for him. I think Zach LaVine's trending up. I think what Russell Westbrook is trending down. That's as simple as it is for me. Zach makes $19.5 million. Westbrook makes $36 for the next 3 years. I would not be shocked to see Otto Porter opt out of his contract next year and try to get something more long-term for a lot more guaranteed money at his age. Well, you might be able to get Zach LaVine and Otto Porter for around the same price as Russell Westbrook, and I can't justify it. I really like what the Bulls did this offseason. They added high-character veterans that are going to impact winning the right way. They're going to help the core build. And I just feel like this whole offseason was spent building around Zach specifically, even from the Kobe draft pick to the Satoransky signing to signing Thad, who he's close with. I just feel that it would be counterproductive at this point to make the move.
I think it's a lot of it from the people I've spoke. It's definitely kind of divided the fan base, I would say. Like, I think most people...
Well, that's nothing new. That happens with every time.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. I think in general, most people were pretty happy about White, I would say. It seemed kind of weird, Kobe White, the drafting Kobe White. But, you know, Westbrook, if you're not high on Zach LaVine, you're going to be for this deal, right? Like, the thing about Westbrook, too, you mentioned 38. Now, he makes 38 next year. Makes 41 when he's 31 years to start the season. He makes 44 the following year, and he's got a player option at $47 million. And it's in the last year of his deal in 2022-23. My gosh, you know, he's a guy that's a force of nature, and that force dwindles as you get older. I think guys like him, their primes are always earlier. In general, the rule of thumb for me is the average prime for a great player is 27 to 30. From that point on, athleticism dwindles. If you're a great athlete and your game's dependent on athleticism, like a Derrick Rose, your prime's earlier than that. Or even like a Zion. Like, I think his prime's going to be like 23 to 27, 23 to 28, you know, 23 to 29. That's it. Once you get on the other side of 30, it's not pretty for those types of players. And you even seen it with a guy like Chris Paul now. I mean, that contract's a joke. He's nowhere near top 10.
We've seen these work out for the most part has not been good for any team. The Clippers gave it to Blake Griffin. They traded him. You know, Chris Paul can't even be given away for free at this point, regardless of the fact that he's a future Hall of Famer and, you know, considered the point god. And it's the reason we traded Jimmy Butler. We didn't want to get committed that long term for that much money to somebody at that age. And I'm actually shocked that I don't want Westbrook. He is probably singly one of my favorite players to actually watch just because of the way that he attacks the game. But I don't know. I don't see it here, and I don't want it to happen. If it happened, I'd live with it. He's a top 10, top 15 player in the league. So, you know, it would be hard to be too upset with it, but I really hope that they don't kill what they've put together before it ever gets a chance to breathe.
And I also think, like, Mark, I don't think everybody's like, oh, he'd be great for marketing. I don't think so. He'd be relegated to, like, a three-point shooter, and that's a huge part of marketing's game. To me, like, what is going to make marketing special if he hits the three at a 40% rate? If he does that, he's shown enough signs to me that he is good off the dribble attacking a defender who's overplaying him on the three-point line. That's what I love about Markkanen. That's where I think his greatness is going to be, is a guy who can you know, hit the three in your face, and if you're going to show too hard, he will beat you off the dribble and score in the paint off the dribble, you know, attacking the rim. And he's got that awkward, you know, that kind of awkward, those drag steps. That's where I think Markkanen's going to be great. That's never going to work really well, I don't think, with Westbrook. I wouldn't say not work well, but I don't think Westbrook is going to be as aggressive attacking the rim and really – he doesn't do the things off ball that you need to do to succeed with for Laurie. He's very lazy off ball. And so when the ball does go to Laurie, I don't think he's going to get wide open looks. Like, I don't know. I just,
but the whole idea of a multiple ball handler system goes out the window.
Yeah, it does. It's all him, right? It's Westbrook centric. And I do like him. And I do feel the Bulls will absolutely, if they get Westbrook, be a playoff team. I'd be more open to it if you're able to package like a Dunn or, you know, any of the secondary players. I don't want to see LaVine go. I don't want to see any of their core players go. You know, Otto Porter Jr., I don't want to see those guys go. You know, I think those – but I think it's just too hard to do. But the thing about it, if you look at it, Oklahoma City doesn't have a ton of options. What is Miami has nothing. It's garbage team outside of Butler. They're now hard-capped due to Butler.
And they don't even have draft picks that they can set until, like, 2025.
No, exactly. It's like everybody's, oh, that's where he wants to go. Well, I don't see why Oklahoma – to me –
I think it's because they have Dragic, who's on an expiring contract. You add one of their other not-so-pretty contracts on top of it, and, you know, OKC could get out of cap hell.
No,
to rebuild. But other than that, they really don't have anything to offer like we just established. They don't even have a first that they can send until 5 years out. So,
that's amazing.
I don't know. I mean, and maybe because they are committed to Butler and they'd be committed to Westbrook and you're looking at 2025 down the road and going, hey, that draft pick would be pretty damn nice. They're going to be right in the middle of a rebuild at the end of the line with these two star players. So maybe that is attractive. But I don't know.
It's such a tough call, but anybody who really paid attention to Westbrook's game, there were massive warning signs. He was awful in the playoffs. Like, this could fall quick, and it could fall hard for Russell Westbrook. And, you know, it's a really tough situation.
The goal has to be a championship, and I don't think that Westbrook puts the Bulls at that level. I get some feel that he would put them closer to that level than what they currently have. But for how long? For the next year, maybe two?
And we've
seen him fail with two of the best perimeter players in the league, in Durant and Paul George. And obviously there's more parity throughout the league now, but we don't have a second player of that caliber to make us a true contender, even if we add him, I feel.
Yeah, like another thing too, I don't understand why they're so quick to want to throw this up. Like, if I'm Russell Westbrook, I still feel like the Thunder with their roster, Gallinari's a good player. You still have Steven Adams. You know, you have Alexander. It's not like they're terrible. Like, it's not like they didn't get anything in return. I know a lot of it is draft assets. But, you know,
I think a lot of it comes down to OKC wants their own pick to be higher up in the lottery.
If you take Westbrook, you're pretty much just
throwing a season away to be a one seed like the Bulls were doing with Butler for that, you know, intermediate period between losing Rose and transitioning into the rebuild. So I think they look at it as paying the salary tax just to, you know, have a throwaway season.
To get in the lottery. That makes sense. Yeah, because with them, you're going to be
enough to be
a. And then
if Westbrook takes his decline that we both feel is coming, then you're going to get even less value for him on that contract, and you won't be able to give him away like CP3. So
yeah, good point.
The time is now for OKC to move him, and I'm very interested to see what they get. I just hope it's nothing from the Bulls.
Yeah, all good points. Brother, great talking to you, man. A lot of talk. We did 50 minutes, a lot to talk about. It's going to be exciting to see what happens with the beloved Bull in the season. And we're just only beginning now, the off season, obviously. But I think our roster is set, and I think we both agree. Rather see Russell go somewhere else. If it's to Miami, I'd be thoroughly ecstatic about it because I think that would be an absolute disaster. And that would, you know, it might work out for 1 year. They'll get bounced in round two. So we'll see what happens.
No, yeah, I'm really excited for the Bulls season. I think they made a lot of smart moves that some casual fans aren't going to appreciate until they see the team play next year.
Amen, my man. All right, man. Great talking to you as always, Keith. And looking forward to the next time. Until then, if it's not Bulls, not basketball, we'll get together soon again.
Sounds good, boss. Take it easy.